Give my regards to the Muppet Show.
Oh, it's just a song in this episode.
It's not a song in this episode, but also is very topical for the episode. Friends, jazz hand lovers,
caftan lovers.
We love a duster. Welcome to the Ethel Merman episode of The Muppet Show.
Woo!
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Let the vibrato waver. Today is also a special episode because our friend and our editor is with us today.
Who could it be?
The one, the only.
Who?
Will Bybee.
Will Bybee.
Hello, everyone.
Podcast voice. Hello, everyone, and welcome.
Welcome to an episode of
Old Friends Who've Just Met. A podcast!
So I think we could start by just saying that we loved the episode. It's a classic.
This is an episode I have seen so many times.
This was my first time, and I was having a blast.
I will say I've seen this episode in entirety, but never in its entirety. Like, I had seen everything in the episode in pieces over my life, but I had never seen it all together. And I was like, I just adore this.
Yeah.
Let's start.
All
right. Right off the gate, Fozzie's diet joke, I was like, well, this is the intersection of all the work I do.
This is so good. It's so good.
I was saying, like, he made the joke that everybody's been trying to make.
I was like, yeah, yes, and I was like, I'm going to share that at Fat Out of Hell sometime. That will, in fact, happen.
It's a great joke.
It is stellar.
I also love that, like, he, like, read the punchline. I was like, wait a second. And when Kermit was still doing his next bit, Ozzy was like, well, just wait a second. And, like, came through the curtain and was like, I'm not done.
We know I love Fozzie. Like, you know, dream partner is a human Fozzie.
Okay, so then I guess my next point, when they bonked Gonzo at the head of the opening number, I wrote in all caps, be nice to Gonzo!
I'm watching all of The Muppet Show in order, and Gonzo is so endearing.
Yes!
He's so sweet, and he's so weird, and he's so well-meaning, and he's so... He might be the most earnest Muppet.
Yes! Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he's very dedicated to love, his emotions, and to art in general. He does the most, he's the most avant-garde artist. While some of them do avant-garde things, Gonzo's doing it on purpose.
Yes.
That's like, just him.
He's this performance artist.
I mean, I can't not help but think about the Muppets where Gonzo's at the factory and, like, is ready to go the minute Camilla's like, burk, burk,
exactly.
And he's like,
yes!
All right.
I've been wearing this under my suit for the last 11 years.
I'm living my art.
He's committed. He is so committed and just a sweet boy.
He's just a little guy.
I also really love the, like, older iteration of Gonzo. Like, he looks like a blue paper towel roll, and I love it.
He looks like he just rolled off of a wind farm or something.
Like, Piggy, you look at and you're like, it's weird for my brain, right? Like, it's just, like, so far removed.
Old construct Piggy is weird.
But Gonzo, even though it's old construct, like, it feels very much still like Gonzo.
Yeah, it seems like he went on What Not to Wear and turned into, like, he's essentially still there, but he's just got some styling by Carmindy.
Stacey London showed up and was like, Gonzo,
yeah,
let me help you.
Like, his suits fit a little better and his hair's a little less scruffy. Yeah.
I wrote down with Java, what drugs did they all do before this?
Oh my god.
You know what I wrote in my notebook? I wrote, I love Java.
Yes!
All caps. Because it's just, it's like, the little guy's so cute. And it's so stupid. And I got the chance to see Brian Henson do this live.
Both of us just went mouth open.
So in 2012, he did a touring show called Stuffed and Unstrung, which was like doing some Muppet homages, doing some improv, mostly like naughty, short form improv using puppets. And it was an offshoot of a show that he had done, I think, on TV called Puppet Up. So he did, you know, improv with puppets, which is fun because, like RuPaul says, everyone loves puppets. He had reenacted two Muppet, classic Muppet things as an homage to his dad. He did Java. And I think he did the old, I've grown accustomed to your face with Kermit.
Did you cry?
I'm about to cry.
I was very emotional. But the Java is fun because you get to watch them because they're standing and you see the platform with a curtain off. So you actually see what they're doing. So you got to see the sticks doing and then like the fire extinguisher at the end going. And it's just, I'm just tied to that memory every time I see it.
One of the things I love most about puppeteering is that it seems to not be overindulgent or pretentious about the magic. Like, they love you seeing behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Like, they love to show you mm-hmm. what they're actually doing. And I think there's something really special about that because it doesn't ruin it when we don't see it. Do you know, like
yeah.
it's still magical and it becomes a different type of magical. I think in a lot of art, we have to like keep you on your toes about like, how in the world are they doing that, right?
This is an illusion and you can't know how this works.
I think that puppeteering, like because it's inherently unrealistic in the sense that like what you know that what you're looking at is not, like when you're looking at like an illusion or something, you're like, well, like, but how, like that looks so realistic. And with puppetry, it's like, this is very clear, like it's a weird thing on stage being moved around, or like it's a shadow being moved around. And so that kind of gives you permission to get rid of the suspension of disbelief thing, because you're like, I'm already halfway there, so let's just go all the way.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you've seen Waffles and Mochi, but one of the things I appreciated about it is they kept the puppet sticks in. Like, you mm-hmm. saw the puppeteers working the arms without seeing their hands, but you saw, like, the sticks on the arms. And I just think that's so charming.
I remember that kind of from Sesame Street, that yeah. they would have the little wire. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't yep. do full sticks, they did wires. But I do remember, like, as a kid, like, it didn't take away from anything, because no. you know that what you're looking at is like a fuzzy thing. It's not yeah. You're not thinking it's a live creature like talking for itself,
right?
Oh, I wrote, it's about perseverance. That's Java.
I also find it to be this weird, I don't know, I think there's a relationship to Java and Menomina. Like, they feel like very much the same brain, you know what I mean? Like,
very devised.
Yes.
I mean, I feel like it, they both come from a stoner brain.
Yeah.
Even more than that though, like the Dunkin' Donuts coloring of the puppets, the like, there's just like a lot of weird relationship.
There's hints to like the snooze.
Yeah.
Just putting so much personality into a tube. It's a talent. It's mm-hmm. an art. it's just wonderful, I think. I did like the little gag of him running into the wall and having his face smashed in, because he was so distressed and he ran into a wall and his little face got smashed in. Oh, I wrote assertive Kermit. Wow! Because he's so much more passive in the later things that I saw, oh, yeah. like, where he's just kind of like, but in early Muppet Show, he's like a director.
He's a producer, he's a director.
He's yelling a yes. lot.
Yeah. And not necessarily in a way where you're like, wow, tone it down. You're like, take charge.
Senator Waldorf is the next thing. So, the hearing aids joke.
Oh, that was my him running into the yeah. wall. That's yeah. why that line yeah. is there.
Yes.
I mean, now we get to We Love a Broadway.
No. We have to talk about the running gag of the episode with your boy Fozzie.
Sure.
Who gets an agent.
Irving Bazaar.
Who is very short, and who's also, like, a scumbag. An agent who's a scumbag, Who knew?
I will say, I did write down, I love that he calls everyone sweetie. He called Fozzie sweetie. He called Kermit sweetie. And I was like, this is actually really fascinating to me that they made him a creep towards everyone.
He's not a misogynist. He's just generally scuzzy.
Yeah.
He reminded me, there's a tweet I saw one time where this person said, like, they used to date a guy who was, like, 5'5", 5'6", so, like, pretty short for, quote, normal guy standards or whatever, but he would pick fights with huge guys in bars, and then when the guys would threaten him, he'd be like, hey, I'm just a little guy, it's my birthday, I'm a birthday boy, I'm just a little birthday boy. Like, Irving Bazaar has intense, I'm just a little birthday boy, I'm just a little guy, I'm a little birthday boy.
It's such a good running gag, too.
Yeah. Just a hand choose.
Also, he's a terrible agent.
Yeah.
I mean, he did the negotiating part pretty good. He just didn't know what he was negotiating. $0.
I mean,
bingo.
You get 10 times that salary, you're still at $0. I love a little math woven into our Muppet show.
It's about education.
Waka, waka.
Now, let's talk about a Broadway medley.
Which is perfect, and I adore it. And I want to say, you talked about this in Lou Rawls, it takes a Muppety person to make this show cook. There's no bigger Muppet than Ethel Merman. Also, she's in love with him, and she's so tactile. She touches all of them, which is exactly what I would do. I would pat all their little heads.
She was, like, giving them back rubs and little, like, pats and stuff.
It's so cute.
I love that every time a Muppet came on, they got an applause from the audience, just like in a Broadway show when, like a mm-hmm. special guest actor walks on and everybody's like, oh my god! It was so cute. I wrote that she treats, like, how Michael Caine treated them all as, like, Royal Shakespeare actors, mm-hmm. and Lou Rawls treated them like co-workers as well. I thought that she treated them like her beloved grandchildren. Like, where she was like,
yes,
sweetie, okay, that is what we're gonna do today.
I mean, I think that's very accurate, considering she was kind of notoriously not as kind to co-workers as she was to them. Cast of Muppets. Mm. I mean, I have a little bit of an Ethel obsession because she was one of the first women in theater who was buying rights to stories. And like Gypsy exists because she bought the rights to the book and made it into a musical. Mm. Like, she was a boss bitch before we had those words, right? Like, she... And I wonder... In all the stories I've read about her, I'm sometimes like, was she a bad person, or was she a woman who actually stood in her power and no one had the language for that at that time period?
To copy the language of Edie Beale, I think she's a staunch woman.
Yes, yes. Staunch! S-T-A-U-N-C-A-H. Staunch! To quote other musicals. Yeah, I just love this so much. I love that she is 68 when this is filmed. She retired in 1970 from doing full productions, I should say. Like, it's just, and that voice is still that voice. Like,
mm-hmm. It hasn't changed.
It has not changed.
Her voice is so fascinating to me.
I actually think that's a really beautiful instrument, and that she could do weird things to it, because inherently it is very beautiful. And in the softer things, like
the beginning of Show Business,
yes, I was like, listen to that ring and that spin. I was like, that's actually a beautiful instrument, and she could press it because she has a pot roast for vocal folds, and that just makes they're very hearty.
Well, I mean, When it's 1933 and you're doing Anything Goes, it doesn't matter how pretty your voice is.
It has to get to the back of the theater.
And it's one of those things where it's like, if it's not your thing aesthetically to listen to, that, sure, you have your opinions. Mm. But, like, in a technical sense, you can't deny that she has magic going on in there.
Correct. And even the things that are not the most aesthetically pleasing, like when it's a little pressed and pushed and the vibrato gets really wide, it's still, like, for me, it's just fascinating to listen to. I love it. Mm-hmm. It is amazing to me how healthy that voice is at 68 mm-hmm. with the amount of press she does. And the only, dear listeners, the only answer for that is that she has truly like hearty vocal folds that you're either born with or you're not. That's not about technique. That is about like
blessed from birth.
Blessed from birth.
We should go through this medley because there's the dynamic on everything.
I also love like the Cole Porter into the Berlin into like there's like so much of it that I'm just like
it was like
is...
through the years.
Yes, it's like a nice little review.
Mm-hmm. And they're all, I mean, they're all like her songs. Right. Like if she was doing a cabaret show, like she would be doing all of these numbers.
Exactly.
But like You're the Top with Kermit.
Aww, so cute.
A lot of dig, dig, dig.
Which is, I mean, you had to do that with Fozzie. You had to do Friendship with Fozzie just to do the dig, dig.
Yes.
Dig.
Yeah.
Also, I just feel like Fozzie is the friendship Muppet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're singing a song about friendship, Fozzie will be there.
A line reading singing that lives in my brain forever is Gonzo in Da Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
You're sentimental because so am I. I love the idea of having those like twin whatnots coming in to be like, whatever we do,
whatever we go.
The thing that constantly... that surprised me on this rewatch is the fact that Uncle Deadly was so present from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, even in this moment, he's like, I hear singing in the snow all now. and her response is just like, you would. Like, that's just
her
so
timing
funny.
Is effortless. But also, you know, of all the Muppets, Deadly is the one who is like, I was at your first show.
I followed your career since the beginning.
Yes.
Jumping ahead just a tiny bit, or out of the number, I guess I should say, her with Animal when she says, is this a zoo or is this the zoo? And then Animal comes up and says hi, and she goes, it's a zoo. And she slaps him on the head.
Yeah.
I was like, but I realized he said, because she sang, and he said, perfect pitch. And she went, oh, and slapped him. I was like, is the joke that she thinks he said perfect bitch?
No, I think maybe the joke was that he was saying perfect pitch, but like as a jab because of the wobble.
My brain went to write, oh, sounds like bitch. And I was like,
I don't think that was the joke. I think it was just one of those like, this guy's annoying me and I have to get rid of him.
But I was like, the violence. She commits so much violence against these Muppets.
The Muppet Show is violent.
Yeah, it is, but it's not usually humans beating up the Muppets.
True. But I also love that all three of us heard that joke and came to different conclusions about what the joke was.
You know what? And that's on script analysis. As some would say.
That's... we are really digging into our studies today.
Do we want to open up the transcript and do a line reading?
Should I put it in the International Phonetic Alphabet?
I am very excited to talk about the next segment because I did not stop smiling through the entire number of Miss Mousy.
Miss Mousy, you know, this was only in the UK version.
Yes, this is the UK spot. And I was like, is it too sexy for the US?
I mean, usually the UK only things are very British, to the point that sometimes they're using a British accent or they're like wearing pearlies. So like, it was weird that this was the UK only, but also it's a weird number.
Well, okay, so I wondered about the sexy thing because when we talked about, was it for the Paul Williams one, the Big Blue Frog, and how that one was like, it's talking about racism, and it was like the US probably didn't want to show that. I was like, this is like, I wrote down, this is like a cabaret number being performed by a mouse in a bonnet, and I was like, did they hear this as being too sexy?
Oh no, it's just time.
No, but like of the scenes to cut,
they wrote the things to cut.
That was okay.
Yeah,
when we did the Paul Williams one, that was my question, and then we were like, well, no, it was probably because it was a race thing, the censors didn't want it.
There's nothing on this show that would have even ruffled feathers in the 70s with censors. After watching so many episodes, everything was written with the cuts in mind because they just knew that they needed to have that 4-minute difference.
Well, that answers the question from however many months ago.
Yeah, if you're thinking about the two different versions, you'll see numbers. You're like, this is very English. Oh, that's why.
I think my question was, they got the contract for the UK first, which is why, mm-hmm. in part, they brought everything over there and were making it. And then the US picked them up. And I was like, at what point did they have to make the decision of what was getting cut for US versions for time?
Because it already exists.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it was pretty early.
Anyway, I loved this, and I love the idea of a number you might see performed in a cabaret theater being performed by a mouse in a teacup wearing, like, a full dress and bonnet.
And then she commits suicide at the end?
Or, like, accidentally falls or is pushed, or what happened, the tragedy. There are so many mouse casualties in this episode.
Yes. My big note for the Don't Sugar Me number is that the composite is really good.
Yes!
She is green screen, and there are some, like, weirdness things that happen with her costume, like around her bonnet. But the way it fits with the Statler and Waldorf works really well.
Yes. And for the 70s, I'm like, okay, how? Mm-hmm. For 70s television, like, I could see it in a movie, them pulling out the special effects for that. But for a TV show, I was like,
oh, there's a lot of special effects that happens on this show that I'm like, wow. Okay.
I love in the next thing that Frank Oz sang an entire octave above Ethel Bourbon.
This is the man who barely was able to croak out Never Before, Never Again.
Yes.
Which, and I was like, I don't know where that pitch came from, but also I just love that. I was like, I mean, we're comparing apples and oranges. They're octaves apart. Are we in 12-tone rows where every pitch is equal?
I just love, I love this whole interview, especially when she's like, everything sounds like a eulogy. I'm not done yet. I'm old, almost as old as Fozzie's jokes. Like, that's a good joke.
It's a solid joke.
There's a lot of jokes made about Fozzie's jokes being old, and I'm like, but also, I'm every time Fozzie tells a joke, I'm like, well, that's a new one. Like, it's something that's like not expecting to hear come out of his mouth.
This is one of those interview sections I think plays particularly well because of the shattered glass gag, and then like Kermit openly like insulting her at the end, and then at one point she does say, you either got it or you ain't, and I'm like, I know that reference. but like, I just love that Kermit says, were you ever recorded as an air raid siren? And that's what makes her punch him. And I just,
but like, were you? Also, I would have been like, oh, I hear Ethel. Are we having a tornado?
She would have just gone up to the rooftop of the nearest high rise and just, ah. I love, like, little visual things, like when Piggy goes for the high note and throws her whole head back and then just pops back forward. Like, just those little things.
I feel like that's how Frank Oz has every Muppet he puppeteers sing.
Yes.
Is the head is fully tilted, and that's how we know.
Are you just kind of copying that off of Charlie Brown Christmas?
Right?
That special predates this.
Oh, yeah.
That's the perfect example of full tilting your head back and just opening your mouth.
Close the throat, let the sound out. I keep saying it, but I really mean it. I would pay for footage of Frank Oz in a recording studio or in on set or whatever singing. As
I have a feeling we're gonna get it in.
I mean, we'll get moments of that in the Sesame Street doc,
exactly,
for sure.
Exactly.
But I want to see a full recording session for the Muppet Movie.
Oh yeah, Never Before, Never Again in a studio is all I want.
Dear universe, please, we're gonna put things into the universe we want.
I'm manifesting.
Manifest it. Mm-hmm. Just like I'm manifesting my Guy Fieri pool party with Nicole Byer.
Yes, please. I would like an invite. Oh, I wrote down, she keeps assaulting Muppets.
There are a lot of episodes where there's a lot of violence towards the guests, so I feel like there is some balance happening here.
She's there to settle the score.
You also know there was a conversation, and she's like, no, they can't touch me. I'll touch them.
And she's like, and I'll touch the shit out of them.
What?
No, then...
Like, when she comes over to Fozzie and is giving him, like, a little back rub, and it's very cute looking, but I couldn't help thinking about, like, the puppeteer who's, and this is later, but the puppeteer whose hand is up there and who's just feeling slight strokes on their forearm from Ethel Bourbon.
Who's dressed like a beautiful handkerchief at that point. Ugh. I want that dress so badly.
I think everything Ethel Merman wears in this episode is excellent.
Yes, but that dress in particular, I was like, I would put that on my body now and go walking down the street in that purple and red, like, handkerchief dress. Mwah, chef's kiss.
Comfort and style.
Mm-hmm.
Caftan right.
Please. Oh, I liked this guest puppeteer thing. I like them acknowledging and admiring the craft outside of their own purview of it. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that happens off and on throughout the show. And I do like that often they refer to it as something we don't normally see on the show. We don't have puppets on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have Muppets on this show.
So they do perpetuate the reality of it. Like, this is a puppet thing. We think that's neat because we don't do
it. Right. I will say I had issues with the hippo jokes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, I was like, oh, boy.
I thought they were going to do a three-part thing where, like, the ostrich could do the slide, the mouse could do the tightrope, and then the hippo would be able to do X. But it ended after the second.
It would have been better because it's just the same joke.
You need to rule of three it.
Yeah, rule three, Richard Bradshaw. Design this better.
Yes, concurred.
Because the mouse fell down the slide and exploded at the bottom for all intents and purposes. The mouse did not thrive. And then mastered the tightrope, did it backwards and forwards, and then fell down the ladder. But
yeah,
I thought it would have been like a fun thing of like, some people are good at something and others are not suited for, or it's not built for them, or it's not however you would want to frame it. And they had the opportunity and they just didn't do that third part.
And that's what the children call anti-fat bias. I do love that Irving Bazaar tries his shtick with Piggy and she's having none of it.
Hey, sweetie. Come on, baby. Come on, sweetie.
Anytime we can get a hi-ya out of Piggy.
Yes, and also, like, truly Piggy is such a strong, independent lady, and I love that we get to see it over and over.
It is constantly beat into you.
Physically.
It's almost often beat into Kermit and Link Hardthrob.
Yes.
So we get to Fozzie's routine, which doesn't go very well, which is bad because he's trying to impress his agent.
I like the bring out the girls. This isn't that kind of show. Bring out the girl comics. I'm like, if we can't have a comedian, let's have some sexy ladies. If we can't have sexy ladies, let's have some funny ladies. And I'm like, we're almost there. That's almost progress.
And that's, again, it's one of those jokes that we find sometimes in the Muppets in the 70s into the 80s of like, I believe 100% that they thought they were making a really progressive joke. Right?
And for like the standards of the time.
It was arguably somewhat progressive, and now we're like, oh boy.
Yeah. Oh. That's one of those, like, in our standards, I'm like, that's step one. And you just need to, you know, keep going. Because you're almost there.
Well, it's also looking at the way a crowd would respond, having someone in the crowd scream, bring out the girls. It's not uncommon, and it's not something that I haven't heard happen before.
Sure.
Especially within the framework of attending a vaudeville-style variety show.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
But I also do love that they acknowledge that women can be funny.
There are girl comics, in fact.
Right? Like,
if only there were more girl Muppets. Which, I will take this moment to say, why don't we get more Hilda after season one?
Excellent question.
Yes.
I think Hilda's a fabulous Muppet, and we don't get her after season
Hollywood
one.
Hollywood erases elderly women. Women over 40.
I mean, yes, and
women from the Eastern Bloc, you know.
I also, you know, because we are talking about the entirety of the canon of Muppets as we go through this. One thing I find really fascinating is Sesame Street was so mindful and intentional about inclusion from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And the Muppets just worked. And I don't know why, because it's the same people.
I think it's one of those things where when you have a certain intention going into a project, it informs your decision. So their intention for the Muppet Show was to make a sort of entertainment, and I don't mean adult entertainment in the way that it's often considered, but they were doing children's stuff at the time, and they didn't want to be shoehorned, so they were trying to go for grown-ups. And with Sesame Street, it's like, this is children's entertainment. And when you think about children's entertainment, you put I think your brain puts more things into context, like representation. Mm-hmm. And
I also think part of it is that the producer from PBS, who was the person they worked with, was a woman.
Yeah.
What the Muppets do, generally, is entertainment. What Sesame Street does is education first, and the entertainment is a byproduct, but the goal first is always education. So Sesame Street is approached as, this is for kids, we're being very intentional about setting it up as an educational experience, as opposed to, this is a very surface level entertainment, we're just putting on a fun show. Also, we're not making this thing for all time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of it that we forget. It really was just like a group of friends doing something that they enjoyed, that like now is this huge thing.
That's kind of where you see the difference of like the stuff that they come up with on the fly, like the stuff that's just like present in their brain and what they're doing in that situation. And then when you have the educational bent, there's like more of an intention of like, how can we convey this message, teach this lesson, blah, blah, blah. Where when you put that extra thought into it, then you start to see, like, it would be good if we had a Muppet that looked like this, or experienced the situation, or whatever that falls into.
I just hope in whatever the next iteration of Muppet movies there will be, because there will be, right? Like, this, we just know that it will live on. That there is an intentionality to, like, introduce a woman character like they did Walter, like a new female Muppet, who's also, like, clearly meant to be some kind of diverse inclusion as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just needs to happen.
I think there's also the thing that's not just in the Muppets, but that's in general media, where a neutral is seen as male-coded. Like the Muppets that are more like whatnots, or like when you look at a neutral stick figure, for like this is like the general example they teach you in gender study classes. When you see a stick figure with no attributions, your brain instinctively sees it as a male-coded drawing. And so when we have a universe that's made of some things that are very obviously supposed to be female, some things are very obviously supposed to be male. And I say coded because, like, they're Muppets. They're not people. But you have these kind of random-looking things in the middle. Our brain kind of attributes them in a certain way if they have certain characteristics.
And that's for good reason, because of the voices that come out of them.
Right.
And the people that are manipulating
them. Well, so one of the things I was going to add to that is, when Rebecca Sugar started Steven Universe, they were really mindful of wanting the gems to be non-binary, but to be non-binary individuals who were voiced by women, that we would see that default go the other way.
Where the neutral is read in a feminine way.
Correct. In, like, a femme perspective as opposed to a mask perspective.
Right. So I think that's just, like, an overall thing with the Muppets, besides them not having any female puppeteers. At that point, so using the male voices with feminine affect. And so when we get then to Sesame Street, where there is, I don't want to say equal, but there's better use of performers in that sense, I think that also helps it.
There's just more representation, period.
Yeah. A little gender women's studies aside there.
Look at us.
So after Fozzie's rough set, we have the actual negotiation of the contract, which is very funny.
Very shrewd.
And then everything kind of melts down, and Fozzie's kind of down on himself.
It's so cute.
And Ethel appears, and this whole sequence is just a lovely transition.
I got a little, like...
Oh, I cried. I full-on cried. I think after a year of not being on a stage and, like, our industry being in...
shambles, let's say.
Yes. That beginning of There's No Business, like, show business, like, in that, like, slower tempo, done so, like, lovingly, it was just like, oh, my heart.
Yeah, I've gone through waves the last year because I took some time off after college because I was burnt out, because I went too hard in terms of committing myself to things.
That's what college does to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And... literally the month that I had marked in my calendar as let's get back into this was the month that we shut down. And so I had like the little like this hurt my feelings kind of feeling about a lot of theater stuff. Like I avoided, like people were putting up live streams and stuff like that. And I was like, I can't look at that because this like it's just like a little too close to home. But over the last couple months, I've been getting back into like. For Christmas, we watched The Goodman, The Steadfast Tin Soldier that they did, and I was, like, crying the whole time. I was like, oh, I missed this. And, like, I've started to kind of, like, I've been watching documentaries about theater and and watching this, and I was like, I'm ready. I'm ready to start doing this stuff again.
Yeah.
Please.
I think we all are. We all... still need to be mindful of safety for a little while, but
back to There's No Business Like Show Business. I feel like some of this informed things that happened in Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh,
like
yeah.
With just like the way the stage is set up, the way they're all posing, going by on the little buses, and the like the way all the crossovers happened, it felt like this is definitely setting the scene and like planting some seeds for what will happen in the future.
They were starting to tinker with some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what can we do with this?
And that beaded caftan.
And the headpiece.
That should be just concert, standard performance dress.
Yeah, when did we go away from feather and
beak? I mean, I want plumage every time I sing. Can I have plumage, please?
So you have a caftan with some beads and some sequins are going to catch the light. You have the feathers that are just going to catch some extra movement.
It's a very subtle look.
It is a Gesamtkunstwerk of costuming. It's an all-encompassing costume. It's got everything. Yep.
I also loved the roses at the end.
Are these going to explode?
And then they just didn't. They were just regular. Like, she just was, like, immediately suspicious.
And then one last opportunity to touch everybody.
Yes! Come here. Come here. Little pets on all of your heads.
And you know what? Jealous.
Jealous. So jealous.
I'm jealous of Ethel, and I'm jealous of the Muppet. I want Ethel Merman to gently pat me on the head. Please.
I am curious how close this episode was recorded in relation to the disco album.
Oh, it has to be really close.
Yes. Like, what year was the disco album? Okay.
So this was recorded in November, over the course of 3 days, in November 1976. Mm-hmm.
I knew you meant the Ethel one, but my brain went to the Sesame Street one in terms of songs. So my brain was picturing the album cover of Ethel Merman Disco, but the Rubber Ducky music playing.
Sure.
I mean, I love that album too.
I want that mashup.
Yes.
So the Ethel Merman Disco album was released in 1979. So it was after.
She was gearing up.
Well, I have to wonder if there was like, not a moment, like, if there wasn't a moment in her after doing, like, something like The Muppets where she's like, screw it, I'm just going to keep doing weird things I want to do. I just think there had to have been something where she was like, I will do Ethel from here on in.
Mm-hmm. You are Ethel Merman. You are the queen of Broadway. You're doing this Muppet show. Why not do a disco album because it is the queerest thing that you can do now.
She was like, it's just, it feels right.
I know my people will want this. And she was right.
She was right. That album will live on forever.
She just contains multitudes is what the impression that I got from reading about her is. Like, everything that I thought I was about to read about her was not what I was expecting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I do find it bonkers that she is buried in Colorado Springs.
That's wild.
And I don't understand how I, like, worked there for as long as I did and didn't know.
Wild.
Well, thank you, podcast babies, for joining us on another episode of Old Friends Who've Just Met. And I hope you jazz hand your way into the rest of the week.
Please. For us. As a gift.
And wear your caftans and wear your masks and
knock over the haters.
Watch as much Muppet Show on Disney Plus as possible.
Yes. And get vaccinated.
Please. Follow us on Instagram at Old Friends Who Just Met Pod. Email us at oldfriendswhojustmetpod@gmail.com.
If you are an Apple Podcasts user, please rate and review us there too.
Please.
And if you like us, tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Tell your family.
Tell Fozzie Bear.
Tell the Statler to your Waldorf.
Tell your Miss Mousy.
Tell the Camilla to your Gonzo.
Tell your Janice to your Floyd.
Tell your animal.
To your drum set.
Drum set!
Goodbye!
Oh, perfect. Look at us. On Whippershaw.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know.
Everything about it is appealing.
Everything the traffic will allow.
Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow.
There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low.
Even with a turkey that